Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Linton Travel Tavern. Equidistant between London and Norwich, our comfortable tavern offers round-the-clock service. Whether it's a hot egg, a crescent of crisps, or you just want pornography to come on your telly, we're there for you day and night, for months on end. Special long-stay rates are available, and there's a robust Corby trouser press and daily shower gel in every room. Bring your big plate and call us now.
A 68 is Monkey Tennis, which is a load of Alan Partridge fans talking about Alan Partridge. That's like the West Wing one. Do you remember that one where he shouted Dan? Oh, that was a good one, wasn't it? What did you like about that one? Oh, I liked it when he shouted Dan. Me too.
Is there anyone called Monkey Tennis?
Monkey Tennis.
I'm going to go and get it.
I thought you were joking. The Alan Partridge Podcast.
Brilliant.
Monkey Tennis. Monkey Tennis. Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey Tennis.
I'm doing the photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey Tennis? Monkey Tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of the virgin.
Monkey Tennis?
You've had to listen to our crap for 6 weeks. Thankfully, checkout is about an hour from now. Welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast. We will be moving on to episode 6 of series 1, Towering Alan, very shortly. Alan's now been in a travel tavern for 182 days. But before we get onto that, just a quick word about series 2. Thankfully, we've been deep in contract negotiations with Tony Hares at the BBC, and we have been given a second series.
Hey!
Back of the net.
So we'll, Strasbourg.
We'll be taking a short break, but we'll be back with series 2 featuring Static Caravans, Sonia, Bono's house, allegedly, and more. But first, the small matter of introducing my co-hosts. I'm Adam Brooks, and I have Tom Dark.
Does anyone have a battery for an Ericsson?
Nick Older.
A Dosser and a Dwad.
And Tom Stab.
This country.
So, episode 6, Towering Alan, the final one of the series, opens as usual in Radio Norwich. Oh, go on.
Wow. Hello.
Very good.
He takes Dave Clifton to task almost immediately for using D's instead of T's when broadcasting, splitting hairs, etc. By this point, it's full deterioration with Dave Clifton, isn't it? They hate each other.
Well, weirdly, they were getting on with each other last week when they were talking in that medieval style. in a jovial fashion.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but remember, that was potentially because they'd been told off. Reprimanded.
Yes, that's what we're what we're guessing.
By now, Alan is fully willing to slam Dave Clifton for being an alcoholic on the air.
Yep.
An alcoholic.
Easy for you to say. He's back on the bottle.
Can I ask a quick question? I get all the puns and references to titles of the episodes in this series. Apart from this one, am I being an idiot? What am I missing?
I've either read this or heard this on some kind of commentary. So all they did with the episode titles was just found a way where they could change a word for Alan. Yes. It doesn't necessarily have to tie into what's happening in the episode. It's just a
I kind of get that.
I thought,
but what's the what's Towering?
Towering Inferno.
But also, I think generally they do relate to the state of Alan each episode, because the first one is a room in an Alan, with an Alan, because he's in the travel tavern. Towering Alan, surely it's because by the end of this episode he's peaking again. You know, it looks like things are going to go.
He's bounced back.
I haven't seen Towering Inferno, so
no, but just it's more the word towering, isn't it? Like, you know, he's back on top, sort of, in a way, possibly
in a building that's burning to the ground.
Looking at the commentary for this, Steve Coogan doesn't think this is the strongest episode. There is a lot of Armando Iannucci and Steve Coogan throughout, saying after jokes, "Oh, that was silly," or "We were very tired."
A bit like this, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this episode's great, to be fair.
What, our podcast?
I was
less,
referring
that,
less that.
Yeah,
less
that. At the end.
One thing I noticed in the opening credits of this episode is that there's a shot of Alan punching Michael. Does this ever happen in the show?
Well, no, that's what I think.
I didn't notice that.
Have I talked about this before? That all the opening credits, they have the visual clips behind the graphics. It's all things that aren't in the actual episodes themselves. They're all outtakes.
Oh, I see.
So it's like with the... when in episode 3 with the water breaks company, there's stuff in one of the credit sequences where Alan is dressed from head to toe like a sailor.
Yes.
But that doesn't feature in the actual episode. So that is, if you look at these bits, it's quite interesting. You think, there's so much more Partridge Gold out there that we just haven't seen.
Lots of ties between this and the first episode of the series as well, in terms of series commissioning and people who reappear and so on. But one guy who turns up for the first time, who I absolutely love, and has to do very little to elicit genuine comedy gold, is Kevin Eldon.
Sorry, yeah. Use his full title?
The actor Kevin Eldon. He is amazing in this and says almost nothing.
Yeah, he's not really in it very much, but his character is brilliant.
And also, apparently the laughter is something that they actually added at the last minute. Originally his character had a conversation with Alan. It was a slightly different bent, and then I don't know whose idea it was, but the idea of him laughing at ridiculous things like the name of hi-fi equipment and the doors of the lift. Yeah, and lifts. Yeah,
these corridors.
They are, aren't they?
Also, having gone back and watched this, it doesn't appear that Kevin Eldon has aged whatsoever. He looks exactly the same in 1997 as he does now.
That's a very good point, yeah.
So he's introduced relatively early on as Alan's on his way up to the room, where it seems upon entering that Lynn has done a poo.
Oh, I love that bit. Just let myself in. Tummy trouble.
I've just written...
shut the door then.
I've written, Lynn's done a poo and potentially been in his drawer. Liberties.
I was just like, would you do that? Would you let yourself into your boss's room and do a poo?
She says she has tummy troubles.
When you've got to go. When you've got to go, you've got to go.
Maybe she was caught short.
Also, it's a reoccurring theme that no one in this series, mostly Alan, has no problem whatsoever with telling people that he's been pooing, is about to poo, loves a poo.
True. Whether it be lovemaking with Jill.
Yeah. He's just not afraid to tell people about his body movements.
What's your point?
Well, actually, not much. I'm trying to think of something to say.
Oh,
I lost it.
So he then is having a conversation with Jill about, with Lynn.
You keep doing that.
It's a Freudian clip.
Yeah. I don't think we should cut this out.
It's just my deep-seated love of Julia Deakin, obviously.
Yeah.
He's talking to Lynn about the fact that he's going to present / host this country fair.
At Swaffham.
At Swaffham, and there's a brief chat about the risk of his assassination at said event.
He's a soft target.
I love that Lynn is like, but it defies sense, as if
why
she can't understand how murder happens at all.
True.
Or why anyone would dislike Alan, which seems weird.
Yeah. I would go and also, that. She does comment when Alan puts his kind of barber jacket on that, very manly. Yeah. Which, again, I think is a bit of a nod that there's something there.
There's a little something.
There's a little something there.
Obviously, he's a softer target than the Prime Minister, who is, as he quotes, surrounded by bouncers. I also wondered if maybe he's particularly sensitive after the Jed encounter in the last episode. Maybe that's why he's feeling
point.
The need for very extra security.
Point. Very good point.
Adam Brooks making more good points there.
A lot of imagined violence in this episode as well, particularly when he talks to Lynn in terms of you'd hit the wall. And later on at the fair as well, when he's talking about pouring water on a pan fire, how it will take your face off.
Yep.
Or you have him talking about the murder weapons at the fair as well. Just make a good murder weapon. You could beat somebody to death, then eat the evidence.
Yeah, I did some Googling to see if that had actually been a crime that someone had been committed of.
And?
Nothing.
Death by onion.
There's only the
well,
only
of course,
thing...
I'm only being committed to that crime because they'd have eaten the evidence.
The only thing I could find was people eating drugs or eating a breathalyzer. They were asked to.
Really?
Yeah. What?
Wow. Yeah. What, to get out of giving a breathalyzer?
Yep.
So it's either not been done before or
here's
it just
a clue.
Works because
if he was having
the
breathalyzer, he might have actually been drunk and therefore tried to eat the breathalyzer. Yeah, surely and unfortunately, no one killing someone with. And then eating the evidence.
Unfortunately, a murder has not occurred.
I just don't see how you're going to get away with eating a breathalyzer like the police officer's not going to notice.
I will share.
Where's that gone?
I'll share the link on the socials if people actually want to have a look at that story. It was
can
in
you
Russia.
Imagine that? I'm curious. You it just eat the breathalyzer and just go to the cop. I'll see you in 12 to 24 hours. he also, I don't know why I've kept a note of this, he keeps Loose Werther's originals in sanitary bags.
Yep.
Is that weird?
No, he's sort of lamenting the amount of time he's been spending in the Travel Tavern now. He realises it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. It's 26 weeks.
Especially the story where he talks about dialing 9 for an outside line and he's been around to a friend's house. I love his reaction there. He's like, I just left. I couldn't stay there after that.
Not after that. Not as something as serious as that. He's using 9 on the phone.
And surely you'd just ring the police every single time and try to make a call.
At this point, Sophie delivers a bag of his stuff that he's finally managed to wrestle from his ex-wife, Carol, including pictures of his daughter, Denise.
He didn't have a picture of his kids.
Didn't bother to pick up a picture of his kids. Did have a picture of Jet from Gladiators. Also, in the commentary... they claim that the box contains all his old year planners so he can plan his entire life.
And again, Sophie being a bit of a dick here.
I think this is a bit mean, I think.
Yeah, laughing at his daughter.
Yeah.
She's really, just a bit really of a rebel.
Like I'm just trying... What haircut does Denise have as well?
It's short hair.
Yeah.
And she's a bit of a rebel, so I guess... I mean, it must be similar to Alan's, I guess.
But I do think his interaction with Sophie is very funny, though, because, again, she's just taking the piss out of him. It's like, have I got a pierced navel? She's like, I don't know. Well, I haven't. And then he's the bit when he's talking about crude toilet humour. Suck my such and such. Something all over my whatever. Yeah. And then Sophie just responds with, my penis is so and so. And again, he just doesn't know what to make of it.
Is she getting that wrong on purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Absolutely.
Fair enough.
I think, yeah, she's taking the piss the whole time.
He then does an amazing lunge for the draw as she's about to
Great
make it. Steve Coogan's watch came off by accident. You can spot that. Him putting it back on as he
That's the second lunge
see.
As well, because he lunged at Lynn as well when she was making him a Horlicks.
And he jumped off the bed to turn his lamp off once as well. Some great stunt work in this room from Coogan.
Sorry, his watch falls off and in the scene he's visibly putting it back on.
Yeah, well, it comes loose. It's like the clasp comes off.
Consummate professional Coogan.
Yeah.
Also, I put down that Lynn obviously hates Tony even more than Alan does, it seems, when she says the devil can take many forms.
All right.
And Sophie's draw reaction when she sees what's in there is just to say bloody hell and then run off laughing.
I think we've speculated enough about what could be in that draw.
No, let's speculate some more.
Yeah, there's hours left in this.
There's only so many times I can say dildos. So he's then at the Swaffham County Fair.
County Fair. Producer Jed, do we need an edit of that? Is that fine?
This is end of term.
It's fine.
I said county. They've they deliberately misspelled the aha on the sign.
I didn't notice that.
They put AH-HA, which is not correct.
Very good.
So yeah, that was deliberate to show that people would misunderstand local celebrities / spellings / don't care.
Yeah.
Speaking of country fairs, Armando Iannucci mentions on the commentary he was once disqualified from a county fair for putting a family fruitcake in the light fruitcake competition. And
outrageous.
He still seemed quite bitter. Apparently, the judging on these things is ruthless. I've been to a couple of fairs like this. It's strict.
Yes. So they take that shit seriously.
Oh yeah, dog fairs as well. They're the worst.
Don't fuck with the country fairs.
The worst and the best.
As of 2003, when the commentary was recorded, Coogan got fire, fire, the fair's on fire, shouted at him a hell of a lot, but he said he prefers it to Aha, at least. So you know what to shout.
So if you bump into Steve Coogan, shout Fire, Fire, the Fair's on Fire.
Yeah, even though, maybe even though it's 13 years after he said that he preferred it.
So is he saying that's one of the most said
praises? At the point that they recorded the commentary, 2003, he just said it got shouted at him a lot, but he preferred it. At least it's better than Aha.
Okay.
Fact checked and approved.
Fine.
I'm just surprised because Steve, you think there are more quotable Partridge liners than that.
He didn't say it was the most. He just said it was a lot.
Okay,
I think we're splitting hairs.
Sorry, splitting.
I like the fact that when he's judging the vegetables, he doesn't look at the steward at all while talking.
That steward is playing it brilliantly as well. Yeah. He's completely deadpan. Yeah.
I would almost believe it was a real steward rather than an actor. Good. And he obviously
doesn't like cabbages.
Skip those.
And he slates the BBC not just to the steward but also over the mic.
Any opportunity to broadcast to people that he thinks are willing to listen about the politics at the BBC.
Can you remember the three things he said he'd like to throw at Tony Hares if he was in the
Bovril,
stocks?
Hot Bovril. Gravel.
Yeah. Gravel. Yeah. And there's one more.
Hang on.
I'll give you a clue. He doesn't like them.
The Irish?
Yeah.
it's cabbages.
Yeah, oh, of course. It's cabbages, yeah. Yeah.
Armando and Steve described this bit where he's explaining BBC commissioning policy to people at a country fair as city chat to country folk.
You're not even listening.
Which I thought was a bit of a Partridge thing to say in its own right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else from the country fair?
Onions.
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's safe to say.
The onion mysteries.
The onion mysteries.
Onion murders.
So Alan gets back to the Linton Travel Tavern, and I like that Lynn is basically just sat there waiting for his return, flicking through a catalogue. Then
also Lynn says, "I was just doing the catalogue." Yeah. What does that mean?
I think that's what you used to do though in like the 90s. That was what you would do.
Yeah,
you would. It was basically like nowadays where you'd shop on, you know, the internet online. Be like,
you'd get one and circle what you wanted.
Yeah,
I remember doing that.
It was basically the internet. Before it became CFAX.
She's accused of being looking at the big girdle section by Alan, which I thought was particularly cruel opening line.
Not the first time he's been mean to Lynn, though, is it?
So. Yeah, she just has to sit there and take it.
Yep.
Like and, a little mouse.
He then admits that he's upset by people and hates the general public, which we suspected all along.
But she does tee up nicely by just going, "Who's upset you this time?"
Yeah. That's really good. It just,
and at this point, a recurring character finally comes good as there's a breakthrough call from Sue Cook to let him know that Tony Hares is dead.
And Lynn's reaction to this again, a little sneak peek into the into Lynn's slightly, you know, she's a Baptist. She's like quite meek and mild, and then you get this news, and she's celebrating as if.
Yep.
But the sad bit is that she is obviously genuinely happy because she can see that it's going to mean something good for Alan and, in theory, therefore her. And she goes in for a hug.
Oh, yeah.
Put it there.
I've got written down, yeah. She's really on his side, almost like a team, but handshake,
almost.
Not hug.
Yeah, almost like
a team. And then he physically motions her away, like he dispatches her at that point.
Is she thinking that it's ultimately good for her, or is she just thinking it's good for Alan, and that's the most important thing?
I think her joy is more for Alan, personally.
Yeah, because she's not going to, I don't think, with what happens at the end of this episode and what Alan is rewarded in terms of series and also financially, I would imagine that Lynn isn't going to benefit in any way in terms of pay rise.
But there's always that hope.
But is it just because she just doesn't like Tony Hares and she has a bit of history with Chris Feather?
That's
as
a good
well,
point.
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the thing.
No, but she doesn't know it's Chris Feather at this point. She just said Tony Hares.
Oh,
is dead.
No, that's true. Just,
yes.
Yeah, and then Chris Feather gets announced at the end of the phone call.
Straight after Lynn going, yes, as he continues the call, yeah,
and producer Jed has pointed out something important. In a previous episode, we weren't sure if Lynn was Alan's PA around the time of Knowing Me, Knowing You, but it's become apparent that she's got history previous, if you like, with Chris Feather, who has replaced Tony Hares, and they've got a relationship that goes back 20 years. So she's
Alan's talking to Susan, and he says Chris Feather's used to flirt with Lynn all the time. Mind you, that was 20 years ago.
So 20 years ago, that would be 1977.
So.
And Alan was, I've done the maths, Alan was 23 at that point, so he had an assistant when he was 23.
To be fair,
Tom broadcasting Big Shot back then.
Tom Dart was probably 19 then, and he probably had an assistant as well.
Oh, here we go.
Shopping at Foster's Menswear with his access card.
Realistically, what was Alan doing in 1977? He wouldn't have been on the telly
anyway. He was probably, again, if you could probably refer to the book and work this all out, but he probably would have been doing sports radio broadcasting.
Regionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and he still felt that he needed an assistant.
But also, Chris Feather would have been lower as well.
I mean, it's been... true. Yeah. Also, it's probably not the case that he needed an assistant, but if Lynn's going to do it, and it's probably at that point for about £200
so
a year.
How did he meet Lynn? I want to know how this relationship blossomed.
They should explore it in Alan and Lynn Origins.
Oh, Origins.
Maybe there's some kind of fan fiction that exists somewhere about Alan and
Netflix
Lynn.
Netflix original.
Right, Tom's taken to Google for that. I think the results are going to be zero. But
also, on Tony Hare's death, they're at pains on the commentary to point out that that was devised before Rod Hull died exactly the same way.
Yeah, I have that in my notes. That it yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? That is exactly how Rod Hull died.
Yep. At this point, Kevin Eldon pokes his nose back in. I've just written, dull, so inoffensive. For now.
I don't know if I'm going to read it out, but the only fan fiction online that I can find of Alan Partridge is someone that's written a poem as if it was from Alan to Tony Hare's called I Hate You.
Please, I think, read. Definitely read it out.
I Hate You by Alan Partridge. I hate you, Tony Hare's, BBC. Say your prayers, Tony Hare's. Smells a bit. Like covered in polyurethane composite. Smell my cheese, Tony Hare's. Cheese made up of many layers. I was great until you came, then you came and stole my fame. Now I'm on Radio Norwich and I can't think of anything that rhymes with Norwich. Then you fell from your roof. I've always thought, what a goof. And on your grave I did stamp. Your wife thought you were damp. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, scum. Aha. And
who wrote that?
That is written by someone called Leopard Storm on fanfiction.net.
Great.
So, we're at the funeral. Tony Hare's widow is the jam woman from the day-to-day.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Nice. Noticing people.
More Adam Brooks doing research there.
Yep, that's right. Peter Linehan, who was the guy who was revamping Current Affairs in episode 1, has now finished in episode 6. And the actor there is... IMDb-wise, is pretty much British acting royalty. He's done all the greats.
Has he done The Bill?
He's done The Bill.
Great.
He's done Doctors. He's done Silent Witness. He's done EastEnders. He's done Casualty.
Yes.
Wow. No Holby City,
wow.
No
Holby City, no.
That is a shame.
I'm afraid not. But yeah, he gets the same shrug from Alan as he did in the first episode. Still not interested. Obviously, there's a slow reveal of the fact that Alan has decided it's okay to wear a Castrol GTX jacket to the funeral.
Great. Great
Brilliant.
Gag.
Yeah. In the commentary, they said they had real trouble doing the reveal of that because they were trying to do it very quickly, but obviously you don't really spin around at a funeral. And there was some talk about it being a Firestone jacket instead of a Castrol GTX.
Alan has also, well, this is previous, but in the future, did anyone go to the live show?
Yes.
Steve Coogan is...
Yeah.
Was it Alan Partridge's less famous characters?
Less known characters.
And he...
Less
did
successful.
He did a similar reveal, which was to turn around and reveal that the jacket he was wearing was sponsored by Whiskers.
Yes. That show was generally not very good, though.
The first half was terrible. The second half, when it was
the
Alan
Partridge
was
bit
good.
Was great, yeah. Sorry, Steve.
The next 5 minutes or so of this, they basically aimed to make it, to exemplify saying the wrong thing. So everything he says is awful, right from, can I offer you my deep, deep despair on this very bad day?
Also, he buys her a travel clock from Littlewoods. Do you buy gifts for a...
Well, you probably don't, but again, that says Alan getting it wrong.
Yeah,
he's
and also,
always getting it wrong.
Surely the last thing you want at a funeral is a reminder of the passing of time.
Very
those,
good.
All those people that say life begins at 40. Nerve.
Conspicuous by their absence.
Yeah. This whole scene, it's quite a long scene, and it is solid gold.
Yeah.
The whole thing is brilliant from start to finish. It's brilliant writing. Everyone knows that Alan is talking to his wife, except Alan, that sets up that gag. Obviously, the jacket is brilliant, and just getting annoyed when the widow asks him out to, you know, when the phone rings.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's just, the whole thing is brilliant.
It's executed like a dance as well, isn't it? The way that it all happens, like basically, he's just him travelling in a circle from person to person.
Come and talk to him over there.
The timing's great.
I did notice also in his conversation with Jane Hares that... He says to her, I'm sure you'll bounce back. So again, foreshadowing of bouncing back.
So, funeral safely over. He's got his meeting with Chris Feathers.
Would it be terribly rude to stop listening to you?
I was waiting for somebody to
Did you say Chris Feather or Chris Feathers?
I said Chris Feathers.
Ah, see, it's in the show, it's Chris Feather. And when you go onto Every Ruddy Word, which is, you know, a properly published book, and also on IMDb of the script, IMDb of the scripts, is Chris Feathers. So I'm wondering who made that mistake first, and it's basically kind of seeped out into online, and then obviously in the book as well. But I was like, I'm sure it's Chris Feather. and then going back and listening. So I reckon someone made a big mistake at every ruddy word.
Hopefully someone's been fired.
Who published that?
Just checking the publisher.
Penguin, you shit.
Funeral safely over, and
Alan's in high spirits as he's gone to Bang & Olufsen to get himself a top.
Well, no.
Tom Dark and I are racing to the same point. Before we get to that, can I point out that he, if you go back a few episodes, he talked a lot more about stereo. He's bought Bang & Olufsen speakers for an Alba stereo.
Alba.
carry on, Nick. Where are you going with that?
What are you going to say? Isn't Alba is kind of the brand that Tandy?
It's like Argos base level stereo.
Grundig levels of performance. Yeah.
It's like spending $8,000 on an exhaust pipe for your like Morris Minor.
Can we name other budget brands in the stereo market?
Have we done Bush?
No, keep going. We're just saying names.
Nick is loving this.
So, yeah, he's bought his Bang & Olufsen speakers for his Alba stereo from a place called Hi-Fi Sirius, which fans of pop rock / heavy rock in 2002 will remember is what Band A called their album. And then they had an accompanying tour, which was also called the Inner City Sumo Tour.
Nice.
Brilliant. I didn't know that. Good. Okay.
Did anyone go to that tour?
Do get in touch.
No.
Alan thinks he's on a roll, so he asks Susan out, and she says no.
So he proposes to build a time travel gymnasium where he'll come back built as a brick shit house.
And she says
you'll kiss me.
She said she'd go out with him if he was younger and more attractive, and you see her thinking about that answer before she gives it. Yeah. And I think the reason she's thinking is not would I actually do it, but is it safe to say I would, because it will never happen.
And then I love it. She says, "If you excuse me a moment, Alan, I have to leave the desk unattended." She's out of there.
Alan, why don't you go and talk to somebody else? It's kind of the same thing.
So there's a bit in iPartridge where he talks about where all the hotel staff ended up. Susan became facilities manager at the Norwich Metropole. And also in iPartridge, he remembers everyone's name except Sophie, which is a bit mean.
Poor lovely Sophie.
Oh, dear.
And his assistants.
So at this point, Ben comes in and they have what's kind of a bonding session, Ben and Alan, but also it's Ben at his most smarmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think Ben is just a very smarmy character. From the outset, the first time you meet him, I just think he's got an air of smarm about him.
I don't know about you, but I think the line that winds me up the most is when Alan asks him what singers he likes, and he goes, "Oh, you know, everything. Frank Sinatra, Kurt Cobain." Fuck off, Ben.
Imagine if you were having that conversation with someone you just met, you just basically go, "You're a dick."
Yeah. What a deliberate attempt to seem open-minded, but also what safe choices.
Yeah. We've also missed Michael bringing the stereo in and saying he has to make a couple of trips because he keeps dropping it. Again, that's such a throwaway gag in the script because they very quickly move on to the next dialogue. But that is brilliant.
Why does the stereo come in that many bits? I feel like it's always contained in a box, isn't it?
It's speakers, isn't it? For apropos achieving surround sound that he's bought.
Come on, keep up.
Yeah, soundbar comes in one box, though.
Yeah. Oh. It's 97, man.
Yeah, it wasn't bloody Sonos.
Sonos, yet to be invented. Lovely Sonos.
Also, this is the point that Alan describes UB40 and Def Leppard as Britpop bands, and then goes on about Wings as only the band the Beatles could have been, which is fun.
Oh, there is. It's a bit of a spoiler, but in Mid Morning Matters, there is a good line in with UB40 where he says, "This is what I said to my girlfriend last week. UB43.
Oh, lovely. Kevin Elwin.
Say that's Tom Dark soon.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, 40. Finished.
He's not happy.
I'm joking. Tom Dart was 35 last week. In case you want to get in touch with him on the social.
Happy birthday, Tom.
Yep.
At Tom Dark. 35.
Hope you had a good one, mate.
No.
Kevin Eldon enters at this point and even laughs at the words Bang & Olufsen. And then Alan tries to outlaugh Eldon in the lift.
Doesn't work.
Unbelievable. Yep.
And that makes me realise there are so many points in this series when he comes out of the lift and he's just disgusted with who else has been in the lift with him. He's walking out of the lift going, unbelievable.
And
this
always funny.
Yeah.
He's at the BBC now. Alan sweetens the pot by throwing Lynn into the deal with Chris Feather.
Pimping Lynn out as some kind of like bounty to be won if he's securing.
I don't think Lynn minds that much.
No, I was going to say, where do you think she sits on the line between mortified and quite happy?
I think she's quite happy with it.
No, I don't think she is. If you look at her face when she's crossing
no,
her arms.
I think she's a bit corny.
Don't crush them.
If push came to shove, do you
think... Yes, she would. anything for Alan.
There you go.
Yeah.
And obviously, as things progress, there's a few jokes in this that Armando and Steve weren't particularly enamoured with. One is I'll get a bottle of Bolly, I'll sod that, let's have some champagne. But that was definitely one of the moments where they were like, oh, that was silly.
I think that's it's just bang on for Alan's character.
Yeah, it's classic
as well.
Alan getting sophisticated culture things, well, items wrong.
You'd best write to the creators of Alan Partridge and tell them that they're wrong. Also, the one thing I thought was a bit ridiculous, probably the most ridiculous thing in this whole series, two deaths in one episode, and they're both the chief commissioning editor of the BBC. It's a bit unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can only get so far if you question the authenticity of a comedy like this.
I know. But they did. There was like 3 days between them dying.
Well,
it's a tough stretch.
Just very unfortunate.
Also, I've got down here that Lynn is obviously out of the room when Chris dies. What would she have done if she'd been in the room?
Kiss of life. Yeah. I'll handle this.
Also, a 5-year contract, £200,000 a year.
That's a million pounds. Yeah.
Someone else surely would have had to have signed this off.
Well, he's the chief commissioner.
Is he literally, like, as a man who works in Teletom, is he literally the top bollocks?
I'm going to say yes. Okay, yeah, he's the top bollocks. That is a fact.
I thought there must be someone else who would have signed that off and gone, actually, no, this last
season. Maybe he's had the conversation. Well, there is
a man live on air.
He killed a man.
Second chance.
They also say it's the. They say that this is actually, in some ways, quite close to BBC commissioning policy for real. I think the whole thing is a bit of a light satire about the fact that Chris Fuller doesn't know what he's doing, but is like old guard BBC, and so he's just got the top job.
It's the old boys nice.
Without necessarily BBC. Being nice. Any good for it. Doesn't seem to matter for long, because then he's dead. One of my favourite bits about the death of Chris Feather, brackets S, is Alan's series of oh no's, where he's like, oh no! His second oh no, it's like, does he think that Chris Feather is just waiting for the right kind of oh no to stop joking around?
Yeah. Oh, Chris, are you dead?
There's no reference to this in series two, is there, at all, like, about what happened after this?
No,
obviously he signs the contract, so
finishes that off.
Yeah, finishes that off.
You
so
have
surely
to presume.
He gets,
I could only assume they realised that the contract was not
null and
real.
Void.
Yes.
Yeah, moribund.
Yeah. So that's ended in disaster. Back at the hotel.
Meanwhile, back at the Travel Tavern.
Yep. It's time for the theme from Black Beauty, which has been our theme all series.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant.
And he's preparing the party bags for his
great
leave.
Callback.
Yeah. What could go wrong with that? What could go wrong?
In a deleted scene, the party bags were itemised. They contain caps, as in like the little explosives, I think, fruit salad sweets, and 50 pence.
Is it definitely explosive caps and not shower caps?
Oh, shower caps. That makes more sense. I've just got caps written down.
Yeah. Explosive caps for Michael because he was in the army.
Right. Although,
they
noticed that at this point, while doing the commentary, not even before that, that Michael's tattoo in series one is completely different to his tattoo in series two.
Oh,
yeah.
I've not even noticed that.
No, they fluffed it. And so, yeah, enter Michael. He's on the scrumpy. His wife's living with his brother, we discover at this point as well.
He's also wearing a lovely silk shirt.
It really is very nice.
I got married in this.
In Manila. Yeah.
Kevin Eldon's character, Mike Sampson, follows shortly thereafter, telling his great story about how he can't cook, but he sells kitchens. There's something so sweet about Michael's relationship with Mike Sampson that in a few minutes, he's like his biggest fan.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we've probably all been that person after a few drinks.
Speak for yourself.
Please, crack us, man.
Okay, I've been that person.
In a Bolton accent.
Oh. Yeah.
Also, there's a bit where Michael introduces himself to Mike, and he introduces himself as Mike Sampson, and then Michael replies, "Hi, I'm Michael something 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 else in Geordie." And I noticed down, did anyone catch what his surname was?
Because
I
the
assume
script,
he was.
We?
Which is
can
what,
you not refer to
well,
every...
This is what I've just looked up. Okay. I literally just thought, oh, I can look this up and see what he says. Mike goes, Mike Sampson. He goes, nice to meet you. And Michael says, I'm Michael Anall. As in, like, I'm Michael Anall.
Right. So it's not his
it's
surname.
Like, oh, right. I'm a Michael too. Michael, basically, yeah. Okay.
I thought, he was saying his surname and I couldn't hear what it was. Like, Michael O'Neill?
We'll never know. We'll never know. Then the rest of the cavalry arrive, the rest of the hotel staff.
It is a bit touching and sad, this moment.
Oh, no, I don't think it's touching because they've gone to, like, they're hoping for some kind of, like, breakdown or something to laugh at him. They're not there because they like him, and they're.
But he has taken the time to print out thank you staff and goodbye.
That's true.
That's quite touching from his point of view, but from them coming.
I did mean from Alan's perspective.
I would assume they've just gone under duress. He's been in this hotel for how many weeks now? Have we got a count for this last episode?
It was 26 weeks, 182 days. Right, yeah. He moves out on the 183rd.
So they want to go there to kind of make sure he's leaving. Yes, Alan, please do leave.
Escort him off the premises.
That's the other thing that's a bit of a continuity thing, is that presumably, if he's leaving the Travel Tavern, he has got that second series.
Well, he's assuming at this point.
Yeah, but he's assuming, though. It's like he bought the house when he didn't even have that series in the bag.
The signature's in the contract.
It's some kind of shaky cross.
Yeah. To be fair, let's not get bogged down in the legal details, but if it's a signed contract...
Yeah,
that's a signed contract.
But he didn't sign it.
Yes, but
so
remember,
he
but no remember that. Chris Feather he must have been was dead. So
yeah,
it's
but
not
no one knows that.
Well, I think that might be figured out when they have to call an ambulance and get his body removed. Don't you think?
Well, I don't know.
And also, when was the contract signed?
And I think, again, in the book, in iPartridge, that's what it's called, I'm struggling to remember that. I think, doesn't he talk about that, and he makes out that Chris Feather died shortly after signing the contract. But,
It seems just no one believed him.
Yeah.
I think it's arguable at this point that the party never gets any better than this, because from this point we discover Mike Sampson is a huge racist.
He is a massive racist.
I just interject here. I'm not suggesting he isn't, but we need to remember what Alan's been... saying up to this point, and then suddenly the party goes south. Actually, Alan, as we've kind of... addressed, is actually pretty racist himself.
Yeah, but I think it's a different kind of racism. Alan is just ignorant about people that are different, whereas Mike Sampson is very actively racist because he doesn't like people of a different colour. Yeah,
And so he's kicked out.
What he said there, just some people found it a bit offensive.
From the commentary, I discovered that you see Kevin Eldon leave the hotel room, you see him walk down the corridor to the end.
Still laughing.
All the way.
Yeah. That door at the end is not a real door. And so there's a split second at the end of that scene where you see him reach the door and then just stand there.
Oh, right.
Because it doesn't actually open in real life.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Alan's back in the room. They've all been in the drawer. The secret's out.
Yes.
And Lynn has to distract them with a song, which is, as Alan says, extraordinary.
Yeah. I don't think any of us could do it justice, but it's out there.
But Nick, if you'd like to try.
No.
He's off to the BBC.
And
do we know? So, are we assuming this is Lynn's song is based on some kind of traditional?
Maybe someone at home out there could get in touch with us and let us know what it's based on.
We couldn't possibly Google this.
We've done enough. And by that, I mean the bare minimum.
Yeah, we're knackered. We've spent 6 weeks looking at IMDb and Wikipedia links. Yeah. Very tiring.
So he then starts chatting pedestrianisation again. I think it comes up three times in the series, him doing pedestrianisation chat. But Michael takes against him. I think everyone so far has basically just gone along with Alan's views on pedestrianisation, but Michael's a scrumpy too far.
Uh-oh.
And also, I guess because they know he's leaving, they can start not giving a shit.
Yeah. He's in basically, what is it, like a kimono? He's had half a litre of scrumpy. He's ready for battle.
Sat on a pie.
sat on a bastard. And then at this point, it all falls apart. Michael leaves. The other two...
You can stop sniggering.
Yep. And then he gets the full pelt of Susan's 6 months of rage.
It's boiled over. She's had enough. She lets go.
Yeah. And she snaps.
It's brutal. I was genuinely a bit frightened.
It's actually very... Like, it's really good acting from her because the anger in her voice
so
is
so genuine.
Yeah.
Well,
in the commentary, they were saying, oh, I think we think she started a bit too high and there was nowhere to go. Because her opening, like, I'll tell you what it is, you know.
But that's what I like about it, because it's like the anger is so pent up over those 26 weeks. She's been waiting to shout at him and call him a little shit for all that time, pretty much. And it just comes out in one go. It's great.
And then she's out of there after being offered a sanitary bag. And then... belting him in the face. And then the line comes that everybody involved with the writing of this was a bit like, yeah, stupid. Which is when he turns to Lynn and goes, oh, I think that went quite well. Clearly it didn't.
I mean, I think they're, on the commentaries, they are kind of hypercritical about the jokes that they think are not very good. But with that one, I would agree, there's no way that Alan... Even though he's a character, there's no way that he just said.
But is he not always trying to find the best in every situation?
Not really.
Yeah,
no,
but
not at all.
Is he trying to spin everything positively?
It's a bit of a safe laugh to put that line in. I mean, he could have said something like, shall we put Black Beauty back on straight away? You know, and that would have been believable.
Yeah. After Susan's amazing bit of shouting at Alan, we're then left with just Alan and Lynn in the hotel room, going to do a bit of cleaning up. And to soundtrack their cleaning up, they put on the Black Beauty theme tune again. Now, I think we'd all agree that not only is it amazing because we're using it as the Monkey Tennis theme, but the Black Beauty TV theme is one of the best TV themes out there.
You might say it's brilliant.
It's positively vibrant.
I would say it's fantastic. So a question to the group. What are your other favourite TV themes?
Ooh, good question.
Nick, let's start with you. Any good ones?
My favourite is going to be... I was going to start singing it, but I'm not going to do that.
Don't hold back on our account.
Red Dwarf, Only Fools and Horses, those would be my favourites.
Good theme tunes.
I had a very, very quick think about this. The Muppets, it's a classic.
Yeah,
it's time to learn.
So these are more sing-along ones as well. Yep. Adam, what you got?
Head and Shoulders Above Everything Else, Maid Marian and Her Merry Men.
Oh, very good.
Sensational theme tune.
Yeah. And I'd probably have to throw in, I think, probably Quantum Leap and Cheers into the mix there.
What's Quantum Leap? Tunes. Sing it, Tom. Producer Jed.
Hey! There you go. That was producer Jed overstepping his professional boundaries.
Yeah, he's really crossed the line.
We've warned you about this. So you're going to get a written warning.
He's fired.
Why don't you let us know what your favourite theme tunes are via our socials and email, which you should probably know what they are by now.
Yeah. To be fair, Jed hasn't said a few words for the last few weeks, so I think we can let him have a bit of singing.
Oh, the closing credits of the Raccoons. I reckon you know what
that is.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is brilliant. That is a brilliant song.
Massive chorus. Yeah, run with us. Lovely stuff.
Well, I think it's fair to say we've gone off on quite a big tangent there away from Alan. After the Black Beauty moment, that pretty much wraps up this episode and therefore the entire series of I'm Alan Partridge. And it has made me think of one thing. Am I right in thinking there is no Bill Oddie reference in this episode?
Tom, you are correct. That means that up until this point we were averaging one an episode and there is no Bill Oddie reference in this episode, so it is only five out of the
good
six
maths again. Start there.
Privately educated
five
Tom
out
Stamp.
Of the six episodes had a Bill Oddie reference.
No Bill Oddie reference.
Poor Bill, he didn't get royalties on this one.
So that brings us to the end of the episode and also the end of this series. It's been a fun filled romp all the way back to 97. Thanks so much for listening. We've got a little bit more to come. We're going to play Partridge versus Madeley and also the final climactic game of Cards Against Humanity. Cards Against Alanity, sorry. Don't sue us.
You've given the game away there, Adam.
Literally is anyone's game, although Nick is so far in front, he has already won. Yes. But let's pretend there's tension.
Stay tuned.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And now it's time for a game that we've chosen to call Madeley versus Partridge. Very exciting, I think you'll all agree. So, those of you that are Partridge fans, you may be quite aware that if you look on the internet, there are lots of Richard Madeley quotes that make him sound like a real-life Alan Partridge. So what we have here are 12 quotes, and the game we're going to play with Adam, Tom and Nick, if we can guess, does this quote belong to Richard Madeley or Alan Partridge? And I think you'll find it's quite hard to tell who's who.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? So we're going to have group. We want group answers here. I want you to confer and come back to me collectively. Number one. Who said this? Richard Madeley or Alan Partridge? I have to confess, as someone lucky enough to own more than one home, I know almost nothing about squatters.
I think that's Madeley.
Madeley.
That is Madeley. Number two. Who's this beautiful man with a lovely voice? It's Annie Lennox.
Oh, I think we know.
Partridge.
Yeah.
Partridge.
I mean, I didn't say this was going to be difficult. Number three. I really love ducks. They've always got a smile on their face.
I think Madeley. It's Madeley.
I think it's Madeley as well, yeah. Yes, 3 out of 3. Top bombing.
Number four. I think you're going to get this. Ooh, you're nicer than my wife.
It's Alan.
It's Alan. Number five. Can you imagine if they'd had Morris dancers at Dunkirk?
Ooh. Oh, that's a tricky one. I would
it
think
smacks
it,
of... I think
it's Madeley.
Alan. Yeah.
Oh, you think Alan.
Okay. I go Madeley.
Okay, but I'm happy to go with the consensus.
I'm going
to
say... Let's say Madeley then.
Madeley.
It's Madeley.
Yeah.
Number six. This would be my fourth root canal job, so I know the drill.
Oh, very good.
Oh. That sounds a bit of a dad joke.
Yeah.
I don't know if Alan... Oh, I think Madeley again.
Yeah. I don't think Partridge sees his kids enough to make dad jokes, so it's got to be Madeley.
Very good. Madeley.
You are correct.
Yes.
This is not proving to be a challenge with three Alan Partridge experts here. Number seven. What is the point of salt grinders? 30 plus years of mass delusion, we must be mad.
Ooh.
I feel like it's Madeley.
I think it's Madeley. Yeah, again.
It's Madeley.
Yeah.
You're making this look easy. Okay, number eight. Railway graffiti crews, get some fresh ideas.
Well, by logic, it should be Partridge, but I don't recognise the quote.
I don't recognise it either.
No, I don't recognise it.
I'm happy to go with Madeley.
Four Madeleys in a row?
Oh,
why not?
This is a tougher one.
Yeah.
I'm going Madeley.
Okay. Okay, yeah, Madeley.
Madeley.
Group consensus. Madeley is the right answer.
Four Madeleys in a row.
Wow.
Number nine. Don't worry, we're nearly done.
Are you saying that to us or the listeners?
I don't want this to ever end.
Everyone. Number nine. 5 stone. Wow, that's concentration camp thin, that is.
Oh!
I think it's so bad it must have happened in real life.
Yeah, Madeley.
Madeley.
Yeah, it's Madeley.
Fucking hell.
Get the look. Get the look.
He's actually worse than Alan, is what we're doing here. Number 10.
He loves it.
Remember when he had thrush? You must have had a terrible time of it.
No, do I get bonus points for who he's saying it to?
I don't have the information here, but we can take a guess.
I think it's Madeley, and I think it's aimed at poor old Finnegan.
Yeah.
Whether it's I'm going to give you... Yeah,
old Finnegan, they're both pretty downtrodden.
Number 11. There's only one more to go. I do enjoy letting myself off the leash a bit.
Is it Madeley again?
I think it's Madeley again.
Yeah.
It's Madeley again.
Yeah.
Final question, number 12. It's ridiculous. Stop getting Bond wrong.
It's Madeley.
Yeah, it's Alan.
Bloody hell, we got 12 out of 12.
Yeah. Get us.
Well, you are experts, so I should hope so too.
Very true.
So, that was great, wasn't it? Don't worry, we won't be doing that again.
So it's come to the climactic final round of Cards Against Alanity, our Alan Partridge-themed, Cards Against Humanity-themed, quiz-themed thing.
Something about a theme?
Nick is roaring ahead with 3 points.
Tom
Stab's got one, Tom Dark's got one, and despite devising the quiz and literally slaving hours over it, I've got nothing.
Just be better.
The good news is, though, we've all only got one card left, so there's really only one option for us to play.
We have literally no choice in the matter.
The uncompleted phrase from this week's episode is, "Who's upset you now?" And your card basically forms the answer. So you can pass them all over, and I will pass them on to Jed. He's going to take a look and pick his favourite, and then hand them back to me. I will read them out.
This is very tense.
You will hear Jed ping his bell for the winner. I'm hoping I can get at least 1 point on the scoreboard here.
He's having a lovely time over there.
Lovely
nod. Nods of appreciation.
Really absorbing the
nearly dropping the bits of paper.
So, these are the answers. Who's upset you now? A voice box. Who's upset you now? Benjamin Netanyahu. Who's upset you now? An exclamation point. And who's upset you now? Camp David.
Yes! Yay!
It's two for me.
I've not got a single one on the scoreboard.
Aww.
So
Tom and that Stab was worth 10 points.
Yes,
that
was. So I am the winner.
Tom Stab has one, Tom Dark has two, and Nick has emerged as the season series winner.
And that's the real quiz.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you win nothing.
Not even our respect.
That would have been nice.
Never going to happen. Never going to happen.
Thank you for joining us for Cards Against Alanity. And on that bombshell, we come to the end of this episode and the end of our current series. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back after a short break with season two, or series two, if you live in Britain. We do. I don't know what's this season.
He likes American things.
Yeah.
We'll
we'll be covering the second series of I'm Alan Partridge with Sonia, the Static Caravan, Bono's House, and all of that.
Tex.
Plenty
Dan.
To come. Tex, Dan, hot apple pies.
Sex people.
Yeah. All sorts
of
stuff.
All of this fun to come.
Yeah. But do stay in touch with us in the meantime. On Twitter, we are at The Partridge Pod. On Gmail, we are thepartridgepod@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/thepartridgepod. All that remains really is to say thanks so much for listening, subscribing and rating us so far. And we look forward to bringing you Series 2 very soon. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Podcast, goodbye and aha.
Aha!
Jurassic Park.
Just quickly before we go, a few essential thank yous. Firstly, thanks so much to Jed Shepherd, our intrepid producer, for putting this podcast together and supporting it all the way. David McNamara did our artwork. Thanks so much to Dave, aka Indie Dave. Rebecca Brooks recorded our adverts, quote unquote. Thank you so much for those. And thanks also to Maxim Lutkin, who was our episode 2 guest. If you want to catch up with us on Twitter, our personal accounts are at Tom Stab, that's Stab with two Bs, at Tom Dark, at Nick Alder, that's Alder for Alder, and at Adam Nonfiction. Thanks again and goodbye. This is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. To find out more about the records they release and the podcasts they make, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey tennis? Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis?
Not my face! I'm doing the photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey tennis?
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of a virgin.
Monkey tennis?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.